2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce here. Another Baseball America Prospect Podcast. Today, we're kind of diving into something that I kind of find fascinating. I think Jeff does too. And we are looking forward to, which is a couple of weeks from now, March 14th, we will have the start of the spring training breakout series, which is, I would say, a really cool idea where all 30 MLB teams are going to put together prospect lineups, and then they're going to play in actual games. Now, these are usually going to be doubleheaders tied to either before or after a major league game. And the major league game's going on. That's nice. But this is what we're really excited about. This is what we're looking forward to being at. And so today, with that, we wanted to look at kind of the ideal lineups, ideal rosters and rotations for all 30 teams, which isn't necessarily going to be what we'll see actually play in the game. This is if we were picking them. And Jeff, like, when I look at this, I mean, just the mere act of doing this, I thought was really not just fun, but also illuminating as far as how different systems stack up in a different way than how we normally look at them.
Yeah, I think because in some ways you're almost punished for redundancy inside your top 10. You know, there are certain organizations that maybe had four or five really good outfield options, but no real catching options. And so somebody maybe down the top 30 or maybe not even on the top 30 or 40 might slide in at one of those spots just simply because it's an area where we're like, all right, there's nobody else that's going to catch that's also an outfielder or other places that they have depth. So that was a little tougher to fill sometimes. I know for the Astros, they don't have any catchers at all in their top 40. So I had to sort of look down the roster and make decisions best, you know, determined by my eyes and the players I've seen in spring training over the last couple of years and just watching the system. So it was a different exercise because you got to see sort of how holistic the building of the system is, that, you know, there's kind of a lineup here with some teams where other teams you were like, oh, okay, they're missing this or that.
Right. And the thing about it is that this is kind of, in some ways, one would think like, oh, well, the best teams, the best organizations will clearly win this. You could just take your org talent rankings and line them up 1 to 30, and that's how they should spit out. It's like, no, actually, it's not that at all, because for a major league team, you don't have to produce perfect order to your prospects. If you're I know the Orioles, for example, have a very good catching prospect in Samuel Basayo. But if they didn't, do you really care that much when you already have Adley Rutschman? If you already have a shortstop and second baseman, does having five more of them in the minors really do you any good? And again, not that you don't keep trying to produce players, but in real life, when you talk about a farm system, you don't have to have an even distribution of talent. But when it comes to this, you kind of need some form of even distribution of talent, because you're right. If you have three great catchers, well, one of them's going to catch, and if the guy can hit, maybe another will DH, and the third is kind of doesn't matter for what we're doing here. And the flip side of that is if you have a very pitching-heavy system or a very hitting-heavy, pitching-heavy, let's take the Atlanta Braves, for example. Okay, well, you're probably not going to do very well in this because you got to put together a lineup. And so how we want to do this today, we're going to go through and we're going to tournament style this. The real life is not going to be that way. There are going to be games, right? There'll be a game. It's kind of an exhibition. But we're going to do this. We're in March. We're going to do this kind of March Madness style. We're going to take each team from each division, then say who survives, who makes it out of the division. And then we'll look at, okay, then who's the best team in the AL? Who's the best team in the NL? And then who do we think's going to win it? So I hope that you guys enjoy this as much. Now, Jeff and I made a point. We haven't coordinated on this before. So we may argue, we may disagree and kind of hopefully come to some sort of agreement on like, okay, this team makes it out, but we don't know that going in. So obviously if you'll be helped if you check out at baseballamerica.com. We do have already up there spring training series dream teams for all 30s, breakout series dream teams for all 30 organizations. It'll help you if you can look at that while we're doing this. But even if not, I think we'll cover it well enough in this that you will get an idea of what we're talking about. But before we do dive into our first division, Jeff, who going into this, before we look at it, who did you expect before we started this exercise at all? Who did you expect to be the team that would reign supreme?
I think the expectation is Baltimore, because you do have those high level hitters. There is sort of a good depth of prospects there across a bunch of different positions. Not a ton of standout pitching, but I sort of feel like they have enough arms to kind of put together a competitive squad. And then you look at the middle of that order and there's just legitimate star power that they can bring to the table. So I think they're one that really sort of made a lot of sense to me as like, all right, it's going to be a very competitive team. And I think Milwaukee, the Dodgers would be another one as well. And, you know, some of these teams like Baltimore, they have a lot of guys that have high level experience too.
That's the other part of this. Now, we always are going to err on the side of talent, but this is a blend, right? Like you may have a player who's a little bit lower ranked, a little bit lesser talent, you know, a little less talent, but he's in AAA, and you have another player who's yet to make it to the States, who's playing in the DSL. Well, the guy who's in AAA probably can help you win a game more right now. And we tried to, again, err on that side with this. And we also, by the way, did take into account injuries. So we mentioned Samuel Basayo. Samuel Basayo, not eligible for this, not because he's not a great prospect, but because he has a fractured elbow. Nick Frosso, not eligible for the Dodgers because this is we're trying to treat this as in real life, and he's sidelined right now and probably will be for the majority or the entirety of the season. Things like that, we do try to take into account on this. We're not taking into account that someone, that Evan Carter was hit on the hand earlier this week and missed a couple of games. That's not, he's back in the lineup. But even if he wasn't, we're not taking in like a minor, like, oh, his hamstring's a little tight. But when you have, when there are significant injuries, we do take that into account. And I think you kind of teed it up nicely here, Jeff, that let's start by looking at the AL East, where, as you said, we do have a team, I think, that comes in as kind of the favorite here, our number one in our organizational talent rankings, the Baltimore Orioles. But we'll get to them. I want to start, though, with, because it's a team that you know very well. So, like, when you look at the Blue Jays as you did this, what kind of jumped out to you about Toronto?
Well, it's funny. Obviously, a lot of left-handed pitching. You go down that lineup and, or that sort supposed
rotation. Yeah.
And, you know, you're headed off by Ricky Tiedemann, who's, I think, our highest-ranked left-handed pitcher in the game, you know. It's followed by Brandon Barriera, who was a first-round pick, and I know, you know, was certainly injured, but was somebody that I think, you know, if he comes back healthy this year, we could see certainly a better year from Barriera. I think most people are anticipating that's going to be the case. And then it's followed up by, you know, another interesting left-hander who's sort of projectable, low-slot left-hander in Kendry Rojas, who throws a ton of really good sliders, really interesting arm slot, like I said. And then you bring in Connor Cook, who, for my money, is one of the better, probably relief-only prospects in the minors that people don't know of. Big stuff, great shape on the fastball, ride and run, difficult slot, gets flat vertical approach angle on that. He sits 5-6. I've seen him pop 7. And he also has an excellent slider. He's one of these rare guys that gets behind the baseball and rides it, but also can spin the crap out of the slider. So he's like a really interesting closer to sort of come in here. And he works typically 5-6 out, so he could go a couple of innings here and give them some length. There's just not a lot of impact. Like, there's, it's funny, you have Orelvis Martinez and Davis Schneider who have experience. We've seen them hit for power in the upper minors. But outside of that, the bottom of the order, you got a couple of young guys in Namala and Bonilla who just don't have any full season experience at this point, and they're still years off in development. You know, Paul Maggiani is fine. I moved him over to first base in this exercise because he has played some time over there at first as well. He can hit a little bit, but, you know, there's not a lot of standout prospects here. You know, you do have a top 100 prospect in Orelvis Martinez in the lineup and a top 100 prospect at the top of the rotation. I think the bigger thing that's going against the Blue Jays is the division that they have to compete in, because they are a sneaky little team. I think the way the lineup was constructed, you have Alan Rodon leading off, who is an excellent on-base guy, sort of more of a modern leadoff hitter. Leo Jimenez, who's, you know, a great contact hitter, can spread it around, a little bit more of a traditional two-hitter. And then Orelvis Martinez and Schneider, you could even flip-flop them if you want, that 3-4 spot. We know there's power there. We know they can hit. Barger can hit a little bit. But then the bottom of the order, it gets kind of weak. And they're also another organization, for a good reason, that doesn't have any catching right now in the minor leagues, simply because they've graduated Jensen, they graduated Kirk, Riley Adams was there, Reese McGuire was there, and then, of course, Gabriel Moreno was just traded out. So you know, through no real fault of their own, they just don't have any catchers left. So Franklin Rojas, who I think just signed, so it's a very young sort of plug and play. It's not a bad lineup. I think it might even function okay in a tournament series like this. They could sneak up on somebody. But this is more of like a sneaky mid-major than somebody that's competing with the other juggernauts that are in this division.
I think this is the clear five of these five lineups here. Okay. So let's kind of, again, we're going to debate this, but who would you have as four? I'll start because I have a surprising four, I think, which is, I don't think that the Tampa Bay Rays really have a chance to get out of this as well. And I say that, that's kind of surprising, I think, because I feel like that there are a lot of years where we would say the Rays would be one of the favorites in a format like this. But when I look at this Rays team, they do have a great start to a lineup. You talk about guys like Mead and Caminero and Carson Williams, Xavier Isaac. That's really good. I really like that. But while there's enough bats, like, the outfield's a little thin, even with kind of really stretching it a little bit to try to get some guys in the outfield. But more than anything, catching's weak, but that's kind of always been the case with the Rays, kind of a case with the Rays at the big league level right now. But the main thing that jumps out is I don't feel like that there's a pitcher to hang your hat on here. There's not anyone where you're like, okay, game one, or for the first four innings of this game, we feel great about our chances because we have nothing against Mason Montgomery or, you know, Santiago Suarez or guys like that. But there's just not the guy to match up with the guys that we're talking about for a lot of these other teams. And, you know, that to me does jump out from a standpoint. I think the defense with this would be solid because you have Carson Williams at short, who's really good. You have Chandler Simpson, can really, you know, is really fast and rangy. But I look at the Yankees, I look at the Red Sox, and obviously I look at the Orioles, and I say I think that those teams probably should beat this team in a head-to-head, you know, one game where truly, obviously, anything could happen.
Yeah, and I guess I agree with you. I think this is the clear bottom two. The pitching is better for Toronto, I think, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Tiedemann. I mean, Tiedemann by himself.
Yeah. I think that defensively, Toronto is probably better. They have a better shortstop, but there's some questions about the outfield defense. Simpson, you like Simpson defensively, but there's,
I love Simpson defensively.
After a podcast that were like, I wouldn't put a plus on Chandler in center field.
I think he might get there eventually. He's new to the position. He's not there now. And and let's be clear, you get to the corners, and again, we're trying to force guys in here because you've got more DH, second base, first base types than you have spots to put in the lineup. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it gets a little tough before long.
But here's where I think they would beat Toronto in that game. They have a bunch of right-handed hitters at the top of their lineup. So facing the lefties is less of an issue for them. We're thinking it's strategy here in a game, right? Because Mead's right-handed, Caminero is right-handed, Carson Williams is right-handed. So, you know, you got some right-handed power hitters at the top of their lineup that they're going to roll out there anyway. So the lefty thing kind of plays into their advantage. So I do think Tampa beats Toronto in this, but this is a, you know, it's the AL Beast kind of like mini version of it, you know? It's very interesting. So I guess that brings on to the next one. If we're done with
who's next,
who do you have three? Because I think between the Red Sox, Baltimore, and the Yankees, it's actually pretty close. I think Baltimore gets the edge. But one could argue for the Red Sox or the Yankees, and I don't think you'd be wrong either way. I think it's a legitimate debate. A lot of power in the Yankees lineup, of course, a lot of guys that can hit. You know, they do have some really interesting arms, which is where I think they have the advantage over the Red Sox. The differences over the Red Sox with the pitching is the Red Sox pitching does actually have a little bit more experience. You're talking about Wilkerman Gonzalez, who's been up to AA. Louis Paralis has had a few years of full season experience. Richard Fitz, Yordani Monegro. But the Red Sox lack a lot of starter quality guys here with command. There's questions with Gonzalez about command. There's major questions with Paralis still about command. Fitz is the guy that I think you could have swapped out maybe for somebody else. Like if you like David Sandlin more, I talked to Alex Spira. He had suggested Sandlin instead. I talked to some guys from Sox Prospect. What would you do? I ended up going with Fitz because he's ranked higher and he's got the upper minors experience. And then Monegro kind of has a questionable fastball shape, really good breaking balls, really good secondary stuff where I kind of feel like a Yankees lineup. We know what these guys are like. They all have lower chase rates. They're all trying to hit for power. And I could see against this Red Sox pitching staff without pinpoint command, maybe really struggling against that team. So I think I would have the Red Sox three in this tournament setup. But I think a lot of it comes down to just, I like the Yankees pitching more than I like the Red Sox pitching. But I think positionally you probably would lean on the Red Sox side of things. Even defensively on the Red Sox side of things too.
I agree with you. And it's even though when I look at this Yankees infield compared to the Red Sox infield, I definitely like the Red Sox lineup better, but I just think that there's enough difference for pitching. Not that the Yankees pitching is, you know, overwhelming. We're not talking about, we talked about Tiedemann at the start. We don't have anyone here who you would like in a head-to-head matchup against Tiedemann to win that first four innings of the game or whatever. But I do feel like with Hampton, Warren, Henry Lelane, who's kind of the wild card in this, I think in some ways, you do have there a nice mix of high ceiling talent plus closer to the majors guys who've been through a lot of battles and are pretty well rounded. Where I just do like this Yankees pitching staff to edge the Red Sox. And again, this is close. I think that there's a clear gap here. This is close. But does that mean the thing I was going to then say is I do think that either of these teams head to head against Baltimore would one game, they would absolutely have a solid shot. Sure. But I do think at the end of the day, as we'd expect this Orioles lineup, this even without Basayo, it's really good.
Yeah, and I think the Yankees' advantage here is, like, if they can throw, like, let's say they have to throw all four pitchers every game, right, for at least an inning. The Yankees could actually, because they have enough length and efficiency out of guys like Hampton and Warren, that they could get seven innings out of those guys and then just sort of worry about the final two innings with Lalane and Legrande. Like, those are sort of, like they can just use them as closers. And it's like, all right, just, you know, you can go in there and throw 97 from the left side and Legrande throw 98 from the right side. And we'll just come in with some power guys that maybe we can overpower the lineup. I just think that they have more flexibility from a pitching standpoint and a couple of different looks too, in terms of like what Warren's going out there with a sinker versus a high four seam fastball guy like Hampton, who can mix in a cutter and a slider and some different pitch shapes. It's a really interesting kind of mix of arms and almost mirrors what you would want to do in the major league side of things, where you're trying to shake things up and mess with lineups, etc. So I think that the Yankees could do that, which is why I would take them over the Red Sox, as much as I do like the Red Sox starting lineup better. I think like you got a standout, you know, center field defender there, in sitting in Rafaela, because we are including guys that have played major league games mm-hmm. before here. You have Kyle Teal, of course, who was really, really good and did get up to the upper minors before the end of the year. And Roman Anthony, you know, who's a standout offensive player, Marcelo Meyer. But the bottom of the Red Sox order, I do worry about a little bit more. Like Miguel Blaise, we don't really know what we're getting there. Nas Zanatello, who I took at second over Nick York, because York's really getting moved to the outfield at this point. Cespedes, you know, those are three guys, two that have never had any full season experience, and one who like ripped up a shoulder within the first month of being in full season. And then Blaise Jordan at first base, which is just, I would say, is like the 50 version of a minor league first baseman in this tournament. Not a standout, not bad, kind of just the average. So yeah, I think the top of the lineup looks really good. You brought up the, you know, the outfield is kind of really good for the Red Sox, but outside of that top five, I kind of worry about the bottom of the lineup a little bit.
That then takes us to the Orioles. So the thing with the Orioles that obviously stands out at the top is you have so many close to the majors guys, in some cases guys who played in the majors in this lineup, that are kind of that perfect blend of talent, high ceiling talents, but also with plenty of experience. You get 1 through 9 in this lineup. Most of these guys, with the exception of Enrique Bradfield there at the, you know, at the very bottom of the lineup, but most of these guys have AAA time. And a number of these guys have big league time, where I just look at this and say, okay, they've got that perfect combo. The other thing that does stand out about this is that the Orioles, especially again, if Masiah was healthy, the Orioles' distribution of talent is pretty nicely done as well, where I don't feel like that there's a whole lot of guys here on the lineup wise where it's like, man, I wish I could figure out a spot for him, because you can put a Kierstad at first base and all of a sudden you've got a pretty well-rounded outfield. You've got an infield where you've got a number of guys, even after trading someone like a Joey Ortiz, you have kind of very good fits at most every spot. And then the pitching wise, I don't think, again, there are pitchers who are close to the majors guys as well, where it may not be the best pitching staff in the world, but it's also one that I think would fare reasonably well in a tournament type situation like this.
You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Cade Povich led Double A in strikeouts last year.
Yeah. So I think that, again, without checking it, that does sound like, I think, yeah.
Get swings and misses. I think we both really like Chase McDermott as a guy that can fill multiple roles. I've seen him start and be really good. I've seen him come in as like a second piggyback starter and go 3 or 4 innings and dominate out of the pen. And if he's going in shorter stints, 2-3 innings, he can really ramp it up too. So yeah, I think they're pretty interesting. And then you add a guy like Bo Meister, who I think is an interesting prospect and a guy who's been a starter, you know, collegiately at a high level. And then Seth Johnson, who probably would have been a major leaguer had he not been injured. So if he comes back and he's good, this could be kind of a sneaking pitching staff too.
And he is pitching in big league games already in spring training. So when we say back, you know, he is actually like on the mound where we're comfortable using him in a situation like this.
You did this lineup. I did the Red Sox and mm-hmm. the Jays. Let me ask you this one. If Basayo is included as a catcher,
mm-hmm.
and Joey Ortiz is still on this team, which I assume probably pushes Norby to DH, mm-hmm. and he's in the infield. Is this like the Dodgers? Like, is this the most incredible lineup that you could possibly have? I mean, because they have 4 top 50 prospects leading off the top of this order, and would be strong defensively with Joey Ortiz and everybody else. There really isn't a weakness. And then you have Basayo, who's the best hitting catcher in the minors. So it's...
And by the way, you'd have Enrique Bradfield as your 9-hole hitter, who's playing a great defense in center. And yeah. I don't know if you'd steal him much, because they'd be like, no, we don't want you to risk getting outs in front of the top of this lineup. But you would have him, you know, able to score from first on a ball in the gap and things like that, where, yeah, this is... Lineup wise, it's, I would say the outfield is good, not great. And if you have Basayo, where you might say, okay, hey, Judd, we're going to move Judd Fabian to the bench, and then we're going to put Stowers in the lineup. And, you know, again, which way you want to go there. And then, but yes, I think it would be pretty hard to argue as far as the lineup. It's pretty,
but it's
pretty crazy.
Three guys who have played center field most of their careers. Mm-hmm. And the guy in center is like a 60-70 defender in center. So like they're pretty good out there still, you know. This is a really complete kind of team. If they had one more, if they had the Grayson Rodriguez, if we had done this a year ago, and they had that Grayson sort of heading up this rotation and Povich and Dermott fall behind
DL Hall even.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be a really difficult team to argue against. Yeah, because this kind of plays into Hall's strengths. You go three innings and just air it out.
So we've done the AL East, and we have the Baltimore Orioles coming out of the AL East. We're going to keep going through the AL. We've realized, like I said, we didn't fully, we wanted to get the real reactions here. The real reaction I have is this is going to be two podcasts, because if we do this the way we want to, we're not going for the 2 hour. We're going for an hour on the AL and an hour on the NL. So we're going to jump into the AL Central right after this quick break. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. What I love about using Indeed is how it does a lot of that organizational work for me. I can sort through candidates. I can respond to them. I can schedule interviews all through Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses, including Baseball America, that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. And we're back. So we have the Baltimore Orioles coming out of the AL Beast, the division where there were a lot of good teams, but the Orioles stood at the top of that list. The Central at the major league level is the diametric opposite of the AL East in many ways. It's the division where we say, does anyone want to win this division? Now, for this, I do think that's a little bit different, though. I think that there are some solid teams here who are kind of interesting. But to start this, we're kind of working our way up. So, Jeff, who's the team that you feel like is fifth if you line these teams up, you know, in, again, head-to-head matchups?
Ugh, I think it's easily... Well, it's funny because there's three teams here that are competitive, and there's two teams where it's like, which team is worse? If I'm lining up these two lineups, it's going to be Kansas City and the White Sox. And
right, we'll even get the others yet. We'll dive in because those are the two I think that are clearly battling to try to stay out of the basement.
I would take the White Sox over. Yeah, I would take the White Sox. I like their pitching better. They have some guys up front there. Colson Montgomery's a star. Brian Ramos can hit. Yeah, regardless of what's around him, I think I'm taking Kansas City as the five, and then the White Sox as the four.
I completely agree, and I think part of the problem for the Royals, I do think that this is one of the weaker lineups of all these teams, of all 30 teams. When you look at this lineup, there aren't a whole lot of guys here that you point to and say, oh, this guy is a really productive close to the majors hitter. There are some guys who've reached the majors type guys, Nick Lofton, guys like that. But like, we've got Gavin Cross hitting three hole in this lineup, and Gavin Cross had a really, really struggling year last year in high A as a college drafty. As a, you know, like, so there are, and you're also kind of relying on a couple of guys here who you've got some really young guys who you're kind of relying on too, like Blake Mitchell's first round pick last year and all, but that's a high school catcher who's kind of being asked to do a lot, you know. I think the pitching staff's okay, but I don't think the pitching staff, there's not enough there to where you go, okay, that fixes, you know, that solves any problem we have here. I think it's something where you just put it all together, and there are probably a few too many weaknesses here to feel comfortable, especially when you compare that as we kind of dive into the White Sox. Well, for one, you have Colson Montgomery, you know, like I'm not saying this is never something where you say one guy by himself, but Colson Montgomery, but also Brian Ramos, guys like that, you just feel a little better about their ability to string together some big innings potentially. And you also have like an Edgar Cuero, where I feel better about like their catching situation. But probably most importantly, I want Noah Schultz on that mound. He's a young pitcher. Maybe it's a little bit of a big, but a Schultz Nick Nastrini combo is, I like that better than anyone the Royals are going to be able to put up again in a head to head, like of who's battling to stay out of the AL Central basement.
Yeah, I would even argue that this White Sox team is closer to the top three than they are to the Royals, because you might make a case this is the best rotation in this division.
You could make that case.
I take it over Minnesota's.
I will say that I think that there's someone I would take
Detroit
instead of them.
The only one that would be able to battle with them. I'd take it over Cleveland. Yeah.
But I would take Detroit over them.
What you think of the 3-4? Obviously, Detroit has it with Job, but Schultz isn't far behind in a setup like this.
He is, though. That's the thing, though. Is you are talking about one guy who's already reached Double A, who has both pure stuff wise, maybe even better stuff. Which no. Shame on Noah Schultz there. Like, mm-hmm. Jackson Job just has absurd stuff and more polish because he's a little bit more experienced. He's been around a little bit longer. That's where I would, you know. But
yeah, I don't think you need as much length, though, because you do have, like, Nastrini is a really good number two. I don't know. I'm not crazy about Jake Eater, but he's a left-hander and, like, has been solid. And then Jordan Leisure's a really interesting arm. Like, coming out late, like, that's some nasty stuff to pull out of your pen. So I don't know. I think they are better than Cleveland and Minnesota. And then you're probably right in Detroit. I think Job, Madden, Melton, and then Montero can kind of match up maybe with even nastier stuff coming out of the pen. So I think you're probably right there.
But okay, so if we think that the White Sox are the four, this is where this gets tough to me. I don't think that there's a ton of separation between the top three here. I'll kind of jump in and give you my third first. I think the Guardians are third.
Me too.
And partly that has to do with, like, not that, again, I think that the separation here between the Tigers, the Guardians, you know, these three teams, all of them, I feel like, are pretty closely bunched together. The Twins, you know, as well. Like, but when I look at this, you know, the Guardians have a nice mix of some guys, you know, up the middle guys, plus some thumpers, guys with AAA experience. But I do think that they probably have the rotation is the weakest of these three. And again, now I'd say Minnesota and their rotations are similar, but I like Minnesota's lineup a little bit better than probably is the key thing there. But I just look at it. This is not bad. Like, there are pitchers here. If you told me that Cleveland ended up winning this mythical matchups, I wouldn't be shocked at all, because they're right there. And they do have some guys who have by these standards, veteran savvy to go with, you know, some stuff and all that. But I just don't like this lineup as well as these other teams and the combo of lineup and pitching staff.
Yeah. And I even think if you told me that, you know, we're thinking like a tournament style, if that was I think that Cleveland against the White Sox presents a potential upset sort of matchup just because of what the pitching is. And if Cleveland just doesn't hit, that pitching is tough. I mean, they got Alex Clemmie as their second guy. And this is somebody that wasn't throwing strikes in Rhode Island high school baseball last year. As much as I do like Clemmie as a prospect, to put him out there and have the expectations on him against professional hitters and at least some decent talent, I think that could get a little messy. So I think Cleveland, just in terms of how they're structured right now, and they graduated a whole bunch of really good pitchers last year. So kudos to them on that. But this year, I think the pitching is a little down.
Okay, that leaves us with Detroit versus Minnesota. Who's your number two? Who do you think loses that game?
Minnesota. You have an equally good lineup, I think, with Detroit. And I much prefer Detroit's pitching, frankly. Really interesting top of the lineup for the Twins with Lee, Rodriguez, Jenkins, even guys like Gabby Gonzalez, Rosario, Schobel, Severino. All of them can put the ball out of the ballpark. Kieschel and Camargo are going to give you quality at bats at the bottom of the order there. But when I go and I look at Detroit, you're let off by Max Clark. You got Colt Keith hitting two behind Clark, and it's a really good setup. Jace Young, we know, can hit number three there. Justin Henry Malloy, the four hitter. Justin Bigby, kind of perfect number five hitter in a tournament like this. Guy that can hit hard and you know, work some counts. Parker Meadows, been up to the major leagues, can play some center field. We know that he can hit a little bit. Kevin McGonigal, not great defensively at shortstop. This isn't a great defensive infield. That's probably the biggest weakness.
I would agree.
But another guy that can hit, he's going to put together a really competitive at bat. It's going to be hard to get him out. Dylan Dingler, outstanding defensive catcher. And then Andre Lipsius, who can hit a little bit and has a ton of upper minors experience, can play a few different spots in the infield, probably pretty good defensively at first base. And then you look at the rotation, as we talked about, Job, Madden, Melton, Montero, all guys that, you know, have had upper minors experience and pretty nasty. So you're rolling out there with good stuff. I think this Tigers team wins this division handily, actually.
I agree with you. I think that they clearly are the number one here. I do want to say, though, I think that this Minnesota lineup stood out more than I expected.
Yes.
The key thing about them is we're trying to balance it here. It's talent, but it's also guys who upper level experience does matter. Like if you have a lineup of really talented 19-year-olds versus a lineup of lesser talented but very experienced 24-year-olds, the 24-year-olds who are bigger and stronger just by natural development have a chance to win that game. And this thing about this Twins lineup is, you know, this guy's like, Yuer Severino was a home run champ last year.
Yeah.
You know, Luke Kieschel is kind of a night at Scope, like you said. Rosario hit a ton of homers, you know, a ton of bombs in the Midwest League last year. And then, by the way, at the top of this lineup, you have a great top three, Brooks Lee, Emmanuel Rodriguez, Walker Jenkins. And the pitching staff for a situation like this isn't as weak as you might think, because You've got a Festa who's, again, close to the majors, will probably start games for Minnesota this year. Marco Raya is like, great, you want me to go three innings? I don't ever get allowed to go more than three innings anyway, so this is perfect for me. And Matt Canarino back on the mound. I think that guy, they're going to work him as a starter, but I think he's a dominating reliever potentially in a situation like this. I do look at that and go, okay, there's more here than I expected to see. That being said, I do think at the end of the day that Detroit is our clear AL Central champion who moves on. So we now have Baltimore has moved on and the Detroit Tigers have moved on, which then means we're on to the AL West. And again, all of these are fascinating, but I think that there are some very interesting teams in the West. And I will also be honest, as you kind of foreshadowed, there are some teams here that I don't think that we're having to really agonize over whether they end up at the bottom of this list.
Yeah.
Who would that be, Jeff?
I would agree with that. Well, that would be the Athletics. I gotta pull up the numbers here, actually.
I'll say I think Houston is the worst.
Excuse me, I misspoke on the Athletics. I was looking at the wrong thing. Houston and the Angels.
So we'll start with the Astros. I think the Astros are the clear fifth here. They're still feeling the effects in many ways of a team that's been dominant at the big league level, which means you trade away players. Also still is feeling the effects of the draft penalties and all that they faced for their past misdeeds and all that. But the thing that does jump out with this, when I look at this lineup, is there are some useful guys in the middle of this lineup, but overall, I don't think this team would score a ton of runs. I'll put it that way. And I think would have some defensive issues as well, potentially.
I think Houston has defensive issues. I think they might score runs. Matthews is going to get on base. He can run a little bit. And I like the Melton, DiCenzo, Baez, LaPerfido combination. Like, DiCenzo and LaPerfido have hit a lot in the minors. They got Will Wagner as their six hitter. Wagner's hitting the minors. And they're really good defense. They're outstanding defensively in the outfield. It might be the best defensive outfield we're going to see with Corona, Cole, and Melton out there. You got three center fielders, two guys that are 60 plus in center field. And then they're a team, Miguel Palma, they're a team with weak catching at this point. So the lineup, the rotation's okay. They're not bad, but it's very vanilla.
But it's not good either by these standards.
It's four righties that are going to compete. They're all starter quality right-handers. They could all give you three innings. But, yeah, I think the only way they're winning games is if they're going, into the 10th inning. And they're we can roll Jake Bloss for another two. That kind of seems like the only way they're winning.
I will also say with that, though, I wouldn't want to put this Angels team up against a whole lot of other teams either. There is Nolan Schanuel at the top to get on base. It runs out pretty quickly, I think, after that, though, as far as this lineup. There's not a whole lot of stars here, as I see it.
I'd take Houston's lineup over this.
I probably would, too.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a battle for fifth.
The Angels is finishing last year.
The more I look at it, I won't disagree with you. Yeah, I would put Houston four. Yeah, because I think that this rotation also, there's some velo here. We got Bachman and Joyce, and they've both pitched in the majors, but there also could be some control issues. There's not really an ace to hang your hat on. Lineup's not very deep. There's just not a whole lot. Yeah, I'll agree with you. I would say that the Angels are fifth here. I feel like that if you took from third in this lineup, we have Schanuel and Nelson Rada, who we both, I think, 1-2 on this, although very different ends of the spectrum. Schanuel, who's barely eligible for this as a rookie. Rada, who's still a teenager, who has a lot of, development still to go. But if you said 3 through 9, this lineup, I don't know if there are, I don't know if there's another 3 through 9 lineup that you wouldn't trade this for of all 30 teams. Is that fair?
I would argue. I think this might be the worst team in the tournament.
We haven't gotten through the NL yet, but so far this might be the 15th out of 15.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This seems to be the bottom.
So I would say that the team of that I was a little, I guess, pleasantly surprised by was this Oakland lineup. I still think it's third of the five in the AL West, but for one, I do like the idea of Mason Miller going air it out for a few and then, Luis Morales and then Joe Boyle. Okay. I'm not saying it may not be crazy. I'm not saying that you may not, have a ton of walks there, but you're not going to give up a lot of solid contact potentially. I mean, these guys have some pure stuff. And then you look at the lineup and it's like, I would definitely take this lineup over that Angels lineup we were just talking about. And I'd probably take it over the Astros one as well.
Oh, I take it over the Astros one. And I'll tell you the difference is there's more athleticism here. I think these guys can defend. But yeah, I mean, you're going out there and you have a pretty solid defensive outfield with what, Butler, Clark, and Thomas. The defensive infield is pretty strong as well. Not really a great DH option. Susak and Hill.
Miles Naylor, I think, is the DH, you know, unless you want to put Muncy there instead.
Yep. But yeah, I think that's sort of a really interesting team just because, like you said, you're rolling Miller, Morales, Boyle, Roiber Salinas. This team's going to lead the tournament in strikeouts. If they play enough games, I would, in the group stage, I would bet money on Oakland leading the entire tournament for the group stage in strikeouts because they play the other four teams in their division. These guys, they're going to blow it by you. You know,
they're going to blow it by you. And that's why I think that they are the clear three here, because I think, like, if you put them in a lineup in a game against the Angels, I think, you know, we're seeing 15 plus Ks.
A lot of solid minor league hitters, good defenders, no real standout hitters. And I like Butler. I like Clark. Hernandez has been good. We know Jacob Wilson went early. But there's no Junior Caminero here. There's no Jackson Holiday. There's no
Kobe Mayo.
Yeah, that's the entire Orioles one. But there's no superstar to kind of boost up some of the guys around him and make it look a little better, you know?
So, okay. If there are three, I feel like Seattle is also the clear two here. Maybe you think differently, but I like how Seattle starts here. We've got a really good top of the lineup. Harry Ford's going to get on base. Cole Young, Colt Emerson, Lázaro Montes to be like, going to hit the ball, you know, 480 feet. Even a Tyler Locklear, Jonathan Klotz. Like, there's some thump here, and there's some guys who can get on base. It just feels like it really, like, this is the lineup that's very bunched. You hope to get a lot of runs in the first, and then you hope to do it again in the third or fourth, and then you hope to do it again. You know, it's kind of very top-heavy, this lineup, I feel like. And the key problem, which is the surprising one considering how good they have been at developing pitching lately, is I'm not all that enamored with this Mariners pitching staff.
Very young with Jeter Martinez at the back. It was funny. I'm looking at this team and in my head, I almost said, this is like the 2023 Texas Rangers. They have this unbelievable lineup. It's really, really good, right? There's a lot of good pieces here. Cause I even like it 1 through 9. I think Ben Williamson can hit. Formello is an interesting, you know, athletic player. Arroyo can hit. Class A is, you know, hit or miss, but can, you know, provide some fireworks and gives you some speed. Hancock, I don't love, but he's got experience in the upper minors. Taylor Dollard has been a solid minor league pitcher. I think he probably would do pretty good in a tournament like this. But when it gets to like Morales and Martinez, there's not enough quality in other spots. That's the one question that I would have, about this particular team sliding in at two. But I do think that, because I think that the pitching is much better with Oakland. I think defensively Oakland's better, but I think the hitting is good. So I think this is a close call with Oakland. I'm actually going to lean Oakland just because I like how round they are and well-rounded. They're not going to win this division, but I think I would take them just because the pitching here is pretty questionable. It's one of the worst groups. Like, I like Martinez, but he's also a complex league guy. And with Hancock, Dollard, and Morales, like, I could see those guys all getting hit around against a good lineup.
I'm still going to take Seattle over Oakland, but I do think – I didn't expect when we started this exercise, I didn't expect that to be an interesting debate, and I can see your argument. Like, I didn't expect to see that. That said – I feel like that there's a clear number one here. And when I say that there's a clear number one, it probably starts right here. Leading, again, you could change this lineup if you wanted and bat these guys 3-4, but I want to get a more plate appearances myself. Leading off, Evan Carter in center. Wyatt Langford batting second in left field. And then also in this lineup, we have like a Justin Foscue. We have a Dustin Harris and Abby Ortiz, who Sebastian Walcott, like, this is a team where, as you said, in this division with some questionable pitching, they're going to make some baseballs disappear. And then I also feel like Owen White, Brock Porter, you know, they have enough pitching, especially coming out of this division, to get out of the division as well.
Yeah, it's like the Rangers again. Some experienced pitchers are mixed in here. Firepower reliever. But the lineup is just so good, right? Like, I mean, you have two major league hitters that are leading you off in Carter and Langford, puts less pressure on Walcott, even though he's hitting three. You want to move Walcott down in the order because he's struggling. Foscue fits in as a three hitter in a minor a minor league line. He's a very good minor league hitter. Dustin Harris has had, multiple 20 home run seasons. Abby Ortiz was one of the top power hitters in the minor leagues this year. Liam Hicks had a really good showing in the AFL. And he kind of fits in as a contact guy. Bottom of the order isn't great with Figueroa and Colley, but not awful either. So I don't know if this wins the overall tournament. I don't know if they win the AL, but I think they do very clearly win the AL West, just simply because they can out-hit these guys, put pressure on, you know, Oakland's pitching, and have enough pitching to hang with any of these teams without a problem.
I think they clearly win the West. I also think, as you kind of alluded to, okay, so now we have the Baltimore Orioles have come out of the AL East, the Detroit Tigers have come out of the AL Central, and the Texas Rangers have come out of the AL West. You kind of foreshadowed it right there. I think there's a clear, if you were then saying who comes out, we'll get to an AL champ here, and then check back on our next podcast for the NL champ and who wins it all. But I feel like that Texas clearly is the three of those three teams coming out of the divisions.
Let me throw this one out to you on the spot. What if we have an at-large wild card bid? Who's your fourth team that you're pushing into this tournament, and do you think they could beat Texas?
I think it probably has to be, we had the Yankees second in the East, right? And we had the Twins second in the Central. I'd probably take that Yankees because pitching's a little better. So I think that there, and I think that Yankees versus Rangers is really tight. I'd probably take that. I think that the Yankees, I probably still take the Rangers just because of that top of that lineup, but it's very close. I might go Yankees. Like, it's 50-50.
It's really close. I think the strikeout issues would probably plague the Yankees with Jones and Pereira and some of these guys in the lineup.
But the bottom of that lineup's better. The bottom of that lineup's better than Texas's.
It is better than Texas's. It is definitely better than Texas's. Cierna, Yorman Vivas, Rumfield, even Ben Rice is a really good minor league hitter, frankly. So there's
quality. And the pitching staff's better.
There's pitching. I'm going to take the lineup with the two superstars at the top and figure that they can figure it out. And maybe they can swap Jack Leiter for somebody else in Aiden Curry.
And on this, you don't have to worry about what is Evan Carter's heart be going to be on this. It's like, oh no, I'm in a prospect showcase series. Probably not as stressful as batting three hole in the World Series.
Even Langford is, played against LSU in the national championship last year. These guys have played bigger games. So I don't think you worry about that. I think Yankees they would be my at-large bid as well. And I do think that they probably end up finishing four out of those teams. So I guess the AL champ comes down to Baltimore.
It's Baltimore versus Detroit. So let's envision this. So again, we're envisioning that you play these, they get out of you're playing these one a week apart, right? So we're not picking full 26 player roster lineups here. We're not picking full rotations. We're saying, okay, now all these pitchers have reset to go again in this kind of mythical one game. This series is going to take forever the way we're doing it, but we're trying to be careful with these arms. And so if you want to make the case for Detroit, I think that case revolves around two things. One is Jackson Jobe. You're really counting on Jackson Jobe to kind of dominate fresh out of the blocks and then you're going to have, by the way, I think Keter Montero fits really well as a closer in a series like this as well, in a one game type that. That pitching is better. Like, Jackson Jobe's better than anyone that Baltimore is going to send out there on the pitching side. And I do think that the Tigers, as much as their infield defense is shaky, they also do have a really good center fielder. They do have a really good defensive catcher. That said, as you said earlier, this Baltimore lineup, even without Basayo, it's just relentless. I think at the end of the day, it's probably a case. I mean, and by the way, I will also make this argument. This lineup was our minor league team of the year in many ways.
Yeah.
And was the AAA champs last year that took on and beat all comers. They won the International League, and then they beat the PCL's best. And when you say, well, what do you mean by this team? And it's like, what I mean is Jackson Holliday, Colton Cowser, Kobe Mayo, Heston Kiersek, Connor Norby, Kyle Stowers. They all played on that team, as did Povich, as did McDermott. This team's already won something significant. Yeah. So I'm going to say that they're the team that comes out of the AL.
Yes.
Do you agree?
Yeah. I think that Detroit puts up a heck of a game early, and then I think eventually Baltimore wears them down and wins in the late innings.
So
I made up the scenario.
To kind of circle back, the thing I love about this is, yes, we did end up having our number one farm system as our best team in the AL. Shocking, stunning development there. But I do also think that it does show, like with Detroit, the thing that I think that is kind of being slept on with Detroit is this Detroit farm system has a lot of upper level prospects who've performed. And that when you see it in an environment like this, you're like, oh, they're going to be really good.
Let me throw this one out there as a hypothetical. Mm-hmm. Had Detroit taken Wyatt Langford or Walker Jenkins, do you think they have an opportunity? Let's say Wyatt Langford, because he's pretty much, I think everyone thinks he's pretty much a major leaguer at this point. Does that flip the scales when it's Max Clark being replaced by Langford for that Detroit team, or do you think, still think they're behind Baltimore? I have an answer here, but I wonder what yours was.
I'd still take Baltimore. That said, like, for what we're talking about here, because one of Max Clark's biggest strengths, I feel like, kind of gets a little bit diminished here, because as great as Max Clark is as a center fielder, I've got him in right because, I mean, that's Parker Meadows' calling card, right? Like, Parker Meadows
is a major league center fielder. So
he's a major league center fielder and a really good one. So, like, you're kind of, yes, it does mean that you're going to have... I would kind of envision the two of them like basically being like, okay, we're going to cover 70% of the outfield, 75%, 80%. Justice, you're over there, you know, in left. And again, who's not a terrible defender or anything like that, but not anything special. Like, you would have that. And yes, Langford from this purpose is obviously closer to the majors, more big league ready, all that. But that being said, I do think that we're trying to be practical here. And the fact that you have that Norfolk team who already has all these guys have kind of done this in some way and have done it together. I do think that there's some benefit to that as well. When you talk about the World Baseball Classic, which is the closest kind of format that we're kind of talking to this, the teams where the players have some cohesiveness have an advantage over the teams that are all-star teams that get thrown together for a day, you know, for a couple of weeks. And I think that's been one of the things that's been always crucial for Team Japan. I think Team Japan has always had kind of some cohesiveness, which is why they've always been a dominant WBC team. I think that Baltimore team would also have some cohesiveness because not that this Detroit team that we just talked about, a lot of these guys have played together as well. And a lot of these guys were also, by the way, we talk about champions. I don't want to sell it short. These are guys who were on that Erie Eastern League champion team, the first EL champion that Erie's ever had. And so you do have a Jobe, a Madden, a Bigby, a number of guys who were there and did that together. But that being said, I do think the Baltimore lineup has that cohesiveness advantage as well.
So there we go. Part one, AL champ. The Baltimore Orioles. We did it just under an hour.
We got about 5 minutes into this and we're talking about, you know, we're still on our first team. I'm like, you know, I don't think we're going to cover 30 teams in an hour here.
Yeah. Well, you know, part two, we'll get it on YouTube.
Part two. So for Jeff. We hope you really did enjoy this. Check it all out at baseballamerica.com. Ton of other stuff there as well. Jeff, I'm going to kind of hand it to you because there's so much. If you are getting ready for a fantasy, a dynasty league, a sim league, any kind of draft or auction coming up, our team has you ready, but Jeff's been a key part of that. So Jeff, why don't you tell us what people should be checking out at baseballamerica.com?
Yeah. So actually when this podcast comes out, we're going to have our first stock watch or second stock watch will be the second update to the top 700 since that release. That's the top 700 dynasty players ranked in order for fantasy, for dynasty league, for multi-year fantasy leagues. We also have positional rankings that get updated as we update the top 700. That will all happen tomorrow. So throughout the off season, we're going to be updating this, and throughout the season, we're going to be updating this. Plus, for the first time, we released redraft rankings. So for single season leagues, Dylan and I worked together on that. And oh, by the way, I worked on it. I've done pretty well on some redraft leagues over the years. Dylan happened to have won essentially the world championship, the World Series of single season fantasy baseball.
The main event.
The NFBC main event. So he is somebody to listen to. We've obviously been rolling out a ton of podcasts, just put out the final edition of the Fantasy Summit series up on our podcast feeds. So you can go and check that out. And then just a ton of other information on prospects. We got the prospect wire rolling out. So we're going to be consistently sort of updating throughout the day as things happen with news and notes and observations that we have. And I'm heading out to Florida tomorrow and I'm going to be down there for most of the month of March. So we're going to have a lot of spring training content. And I think everything kind of rolls together. It's not just the fantasy specific stuff that's of value, but all the reporting, all the news, all the rankings, all the reports that we have.
With that, as always, we say thank you to our Baseball America subscribers because you all supporting us allows us to do what we do. Speaking of subscribers, if you subscribe to the Baseball America podcast, please feel free to give us a review. That does help other people find the podcast. With all that, for Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.